Good morning. When I was told this was going to be 8 o'clock on a Sunday morning, I was slightly deflated about that, but I'm relieved to see so many people here today, so thank you for coming. Hopefully you'll find this a reasonably interesting seminar today. Title's up on there. I'm not going to repeat what Andy just said. Thank you for that introduction, Andy. Learning objects of today provide some common standard operating parameters for both fan coil units and chill beams, explain why these exist, and provide an overview of the energy studies completed. This is an energy study we did using some software to actually look at the difference you would get between a whole system either operating with chill beams or fan coil units. We'll give you a description of the plant that we used, and we'll also present the results, compare the results at the end, and obviously at the end we'd like to take some questions if you have any. Please walk up to the microphone if you can. Thank you. A few acknowledgements. EDSL are the software people. They were very kind and offered us a lot of advice to actually do this study and carried out a lot of computer simulations. Also like to acknowledge that the Federation of Environmental Trade Associations in the UK, they have a number of groups. One is the HVAC Fan Coil Unit Group, which we're a member of, and they were very, very helpful in doing this as well. The agenda for today is up on the screen. Basically, it's almost the same as the learning objectives. So, without further ado, a little bit about the simulation software. It's EDSL TAS software. It comprises a number of modules. A 3D modeler to create your building, so you can put the facade in, the glazing in, how good it is, the U values, etc. Also a building simulator, so you can actually mimic just about everything that's going on within your building. And there's a results view, which is very handy for someone like me who wants to put out the results and show you lots of graphs and explain what's going on. The software itself is used in the UK for energy performance certificates. All new buildings have a certificate. It's also there to make sure that any new building complies with the UK building regulations, Part L2. It's also used, or has been set up, so it can be used for ASHRAE 141 2007 envelope and HVAC equipment performance compliant. This is the only things I have to read some notes on. They wouldn't stay in my head. And also it's been set up for BSEN ISO 13791 and BSEN 15255, which is thermal performance of building and energy performance of buildings. That's enough about the software, but it needs just to be shown what we have used to do this study. So the contenders, I'd like to call them. Active chill beam. The active chill beam we've used for this study is a linear device. It's probably the most common type of active chill beam that you would see in the marketplace, both here and in the UK. It tends to be a lot longer than it is wide, hence the linear description. It has two discharge slots on the outside of the chill beam. It gives you a two-way discharge. I'm not going to go into full description now about how active chill beams work, but they also do heating and cooling. They have a coil in there to provide both those services. Generally speaking, for most applications, a chill beam would need in the region 100 pascals to actually work. Sometimes it's lower than that, sometimes higher than that, but typically 100 pascals. I do apologise. I have to speak in metric. I can't quite relate what it means to in imperial, so excuse me for that. Here's a photo of an active chill beam installed into an office. This is towards the perimeter of an office. It's also applicable to multi-service chill beams, which you can see here. You've got a chill beam there with light fittings on it. The fan coil unit. I would point out this is a UK spec fan coil unit. It might differ slightly from what is used over here. A colleague of mine has said that they're sometimes known as a variable terminal unit. It's used for heating and cooling, so we have a coil block in there that can provide heating and cooling. For the unit that we use, 90% of the coil block is used for cooling, and only about 10% of the coil block for heating, but that would vary depending on the environment that's being used in. Electronically accommodated direct current motors are almost the norm in the UK now. We don't use AC anymore, so all these studies have been done using EC-DC motors. Gives you a much more energy-efficient unit. It's also very good for variable air volume. So the study included variable air volume from the fan coil unit. It's not a fixed air volume. So standard operating parameters for active chilled beams and fan coolings. Well, for an active chilled beam, the standard operating parameters would be with the supply water temperature of 14 and the return water temperature of 17. This is done to ensure that we don't get condensation. You have a dry coil, doesn't have a filter, can't have condensation, so we use elevated water temperatures. The selection point usually for an active chilled beam is 24 degrees C in the room, and the relative humidity is usually around about 50%, but obviously there's a band there. And the operating pressure, or the pressure required to make the active chilled beam work, is 100 pascals. These are sort of figures we've used when we did this energy study. I know with active chilled beams, if you want to push them a little harder, you can actually go for a higher pressure, but 100 pascals seemed, at the time that we decided to do this, the correct pressure to use. With the fan coil unit, slightly different in terms of the standard operating parameters, especially on temperature. If we go back about 10, 15 years, most projects would use a supply water temperature of 6 degrees C with a return of 12. But over the last 10 years, that's changed dramatically. In that the variety of supply water temperatures and the variety of return water temperatures used for fan coil units can be anything between 5, 11 and 14, 17, and occasionally I've seen higher than that. In terms of the room temperature, the design point is 24, range of 20 to 24. Relative humidity is the same as the active chill beam. Operating pressure is not applicable because the fresh air is actually not connected directly to the fan coil unit. It's connected to the the air is discharged towards the rear of the unit. In terms of building regulations, there's nothing in the building regulations that directly affect active chill beams, but there is for a fan coil unit. What we have in the UK is something called limiting specific fan power, and that's watts to move a litre per second of air. 2006, that was 0.8 watts per litre per second, and in 2006, there was a slow take-up of EC-DC motors. In 2010, it actually changed to 0.6 watts per litre per second. It made it much harder to use anything but EC-DC, and since then, there's been a complete sway of movement over to using EC-DC motors in just about every fan coil unit project. So at the moment, in 2013, the regulations require that the specific fan power of your motor is below 0.5 watts per litre per second. Although those building regulations require 0.5, most specifications we see are actually much lower than that, in the region about 0.25 watts per litre per second. So our simulated building, so this is just a screenshot of the task software with the building within there. It was a 8-storey building that we used. 35 metres by 50 metres. It's a Part L2 UK-compliant building in terms of its construction, in terms of glazing, etc., and each floor-to-ceiling height is about 2.8 metres within the space. Each floor plate has a perimeter zone, a 6-metre-deep perimeter zone, and within the floor plate, each floor was applied an internal load for lighting, for small power. And the figure that was used was about 50 watts per square metre for the small power for the lighting in the space. Around the 6-metre perimeter zone, we applied a average solar facade gain of about 40 watts per square metre. So the perimeter gain, as shown in the orange area there, is about 90 watts per square metre. So our simulated HVAC plant. So within the software, we put lots of bits and pieces for the plant, the pumps, etc. So just to explain what we've actually got. So this is our main air handling unit. So we have a supplementary heating coil, just to warm up the air when it gets extreme outside, so that it's applicable to go through the next part in the system, which is our heat recovery unit, which has an efficiency of 0.7. We have our supply air fan. So this is our air handling supply air fan. For an active chill beam, we use a specific fan power 1.9 watts per litre per second. But the fan coil unit, it was just slightly lower, 1.8 watts per litre per second, just to take into account that with an active chill beam system, you're going to see a little bit more pressure at the air handling. So we've just allowed a little bit more energy required to run the fan. We have our heating coil, set point to 16 degrees C, and we have our cooling coil, set point to 16. So the primary air for the studies was 16 degrees C for both the active chill beam and the fan coil unit. The little box I show up there is the thermal device unit, the group of fan coil units and the active chill beams. So this is where the air is going to. And the pressure rate for both the studies were set at 12 litres a second, which is the UK norm. It's about 25 cubic feet per minute. So I think it complies with ASHRAE 62/2004. We also have a return air fan to bring the air back and put it back outside. Specific fan power, that for both sets of results was 0.3 watts per litre per second. We'll highlight just a little box there, which you're trying to think what it is. It's not a swirl diffuser. What it is we also applied a control load or parasitic load so that within the simulated software, within the simulation software, it took account that there are some controls within the space and the controls themselves do use a little bit of energy. So we actually applied that to it to make it as thorough as possible. In terms of the chilled water system, so to supply the water to both the active chill beam and the fan coil unit, we used a water chiller here with a set point of 14 degrees C. With a variable pump, and this was connected to your terminal device group, your active chill beams and your fan coil units. But we also included a dry air cooler, which is something that helps to improve the efficiency of your system by taking your return water from that system, and if it's available, using the ambient air temperature to cool it down. Now, this won't be... there's a lot of areas in the world where dry air coolers simply couldn't be used. This is obviously applicable more to the UK and maybe some areas over here. The chiller and DAC performance were based on commonly used models, and the performance of both of those varied with the ambient air temperature, so it was a dynamic model. There was no fixed efficiency or no fixed COP. In terms of the hot water, we had a condensing boiler set at 60 degrees C, connected to our thermal units with a variable water pump, peak pressure 100, but they were variable water pump. And in terms of the air handling unit, the chilled water, we used 6 degrees C, a separate chiller for the air handling user to give us water at 60 degrees C. So if we want to do, we can do some dehumidification to help control the space. So in both instances, both the fan coil unit and the chill beam would run with a dry coil. You wouldn't get condensation. We had this was connected to our air handling coil, and again we had a variable pump. So this was just a description of the actual systems that went into the model. The whole system was optimised to give you some free cooling using a dry air cooler, and we also optimised the controls on the fan coil and chill beam to make sure that we took as much benefit from that as possible. One of the things we do a lot now is we actually use two-port control on our terminal unit, and the reason being is the return air water temperature from two-port control is a little bit higher than the four-port. This is a four-port system. You've got two lines in there, one's a fan coil unit, one's the active chill beam. So at 100% load, so this is your peak design load within the space, you have a return water temperature of about 16 degrees C. So that's what would go back through your dry air cooler. But any other occasion where you're in a part load condition, your return water temperatures are going to be lower than 17 degrees C, so you're not likely to get so much benefit from your dry air cooler. If we compare that to two-port control, where you actually lower the water flow rate that's been returned to the chiller, 100% design load, you're going to get a return water at 17 degrees C, but any part load conditions actually can be quite a bit higher than that. So here we're showing that your return water from your fan coil could be as high as 20 degrees C, and that, in fact, with the active chill beam, it can be a little bit higher. And one of the things with this study was we used VAV on the fan coil unit, and using VAV in the fan coil unit means that the coil doesn't have that constant air volume through it, so sometimes you have to put more water through the fan coil unit coil to give you your cooling, whereas with the active chill beam, it's a constant volume system, the coil reacts in a slightly different way. So we put this side by side. What the difference between four-port and two-control is the return water. And you can see the differential is about 7 degrees C. And that 7 degrees C difference between having return water at 14 to, say, 20 degrees C will have a huge impact on how much you're going to get out of your dry cooler. In terms of room temperature control, the active chill beam used two-port modulating control, and the fan coil unit used two-port modulating control and variable secondary airflow. So turn down on the fan coil unit was actually 250%. We wouldn't go any further than that because we want to make sure that we select a grill and diffuser connected to the fan coil unit that provided good air distribution and comfort. These are sort of examples of the valve sets that two-port valve set we'd use. The left-hand one's a rotary mechanical device. The right-hand side one is something slightly new to the market, which is an electronic pressure-independent valve. Actually has an ultrasonic meter plugged into it. So the results. So we simulated the same plant for both the active chill beam and the fan coil unit, run them with the same design conditions, just to see how they would compare in terms of energy usage in the building. Lots of the graphs coming up. I'll explain what we're looking at, and then at the end we can analyse it a little bit more. So this is your demand for a fan coil unit, month by month. This is based in London weather data. And as you expect, in January, you have a much higher heating requirement, which is the bottom red colour on there, and the blue colour there. The next one up is your cooling requirement. You've got a lot more cooling requirement as you'd expect in the summer. So that's a typical what you expect as a demand. The orange is your equipment load, and the yellow is your lighting load sat at the top there. So this is your fan coil unit system. When we look at the active chill beam system, it does change very, very slightly. I will overlay them. Do not worry, this is not you having to clean your glasses or fill in the effects of last night. This is just to show the difference between the two systems. And the active chill beams will, as you would expect, use slightly less energy in the summer months because you have to overcome the heat put in by the electronic motors that are in the fan coil unit. So this is demand from the building. So this is your consumption. So this is what's required to actually deal with the demand in that building. So it's a little bit more flat. It's a little bit flatter in terms of what's required. You can see month by month the bottom shaded red area is your boiler. You can see month by month what happens in terms of your cooling. And even in London, don't let anybody tell you it's that cold. We do require some cooling in the winter months, as shown on there. And conversely, we do require some heating in the summer months. We can't have everything. So that was the fan coil unit. And this is the active chill beam. Again, there's not a lot has changed there. We'll just overlay them. You can see there's a little bit of change where the active chill beams consumption slightly less in the summer months, as you'd expect it to be, because you don't have to overcome the heat generated by those motors. This is the results. This is the plant usage over that period of time. Slightly different colour scheme. The bottom green area, which we'll look at a little bit more later on, is your air handling usage, which is relatively flat because you do have a constant air volume throughout the year. Then you have your lighting, which is the blue. Sorry, I couldn't keep them the same colour. And then you have your electrical group. But it's the ones at the top are the interesting ones, where you've got your chiller demand, which is the brownie-looking colour. You have your the grey is your dry cooler. But most interesting is the actual top bit, which is the little fluorescent green piece, is the actual electrical group, which is the terminal fans. Also, it's the controls required to run those terminal fans. So there's your results for a fan coil unit. If we put out the results for an active chill beam, again, the changes are subtle. The biggest one that I would point you to, is at the top when you overlay them, that obviously the active chill beam doesn't have fans in it, so it's using less energy. So let's just look at that a little bit more detail. So here we have the annual plant usage in terms of energy for an active chill beam and a fan coil unit side by side. Within this, there are certain parts that are not shown, things like pumps, simply because they're on such a smaller scale, they don't show up. We'll show that in the next slide. So what we have is your air handling unit fans are your bottom blue section. And as you would expect, fan coil unit uses slightly less energy, not a lot, slightly less energy, because the active chill beam does see a little bit more pressure. If we look at the next section, this is our chiller for your terminal unit. Unfortunately, with the fan coil unit having to deal with the load of the motors, the chiller has to work a little bit harder. So if you're looking to see a race here, there isn't a lot of difference between the two. We have our boiler and we have our chiller for the primary system. Again, there's really, really no difference between the two. When we get to the top and we look at our boiler load, with the fan coil unit uses slightly less energy on the boiler because you've got heat pickup of the fans. Our light blue section at the top is our control load or parasitic load. And then for the fan coil unit, at the very top there, you've got the fan coil unit fan load. So you can see the difference between the two there. And if, in terms of percentage terms, it's about 1.5% difference between active fuel and fan coil unit, using exactly the same plant, supplying exactly the same water temperature. One interesting thing about this is when you look at the top of this, the control load, parasitic load, that's actually used to keep the zone controls going is possibly more than what the actual EC-DC motors are using when you're running them in VAV. I did say that there were some smaller loads that went on that last graph simply because the scale was wrong. And the reason I just want to show you these is that one thing that needs to be shown is that the bottom section there, which is the cooling circulation pump, the fan coil unit system uses quite a bit more energy because you have to put more water through it to deliver the same amount of cooling because you're using variable air volume. Whereas the rest of it, the usage in terms of the dry air cooler, heated circulation pump, chiller pumps, are all very, very similar. So we did the initial study to see how they would operate under the same condition, which is using 1417 water, which is the normal way of running an active chill beam, and we've seen it more and more with fan coil units just to get a little bit more efficiency out of dry air coolers in the UK. So here we have a little bit more detail. So the two left-hand plots there are from the study that you've already seen, which is the active chill beam and the fan coil unit using 1417 water. But what we also looked at is a fan coil unit using 1015 water, fan coil unit using 612 water, so using more conventional temperatures that you saw maybe 10, 15 years ago. And then we took the dry air cooler out of the fan coil unit. We would have done the same for the active chill beam, but that would have been senseless. You'd never run active chill beams down quite that low. So when we look at the difference between those systems, that little band I put at the top equates to about 5%. So you can see what difference it makes using the different temperatures and taking out the dry air cooler. If we look at that in a little bit more detail, the one thing that stands out from this that needs to be looked at, I think, is the actual chiller for the terminal units. The rest of the sections are pretty much the same all the way through. If we just pull that out for the fan coil unit just to show what's going on, the left-hand line there is for your fan coil using the water temperature of 1417, which is the basis for this study. When we're using water temperatures at 1015, we actually use 9% more energy on the chiller. If we use 612, which is still quite often used, 10 years ago it was just about every fan coil unit system, it used the old chiller, we use 16% more energy. And if we drop the dry air cooler, our chiller, we use 31% more energy. So it's very important, especially in London, that we can, if we want to save energy, we have to stick the dry air cooler in there. And if you want to save even more, use the elevated water temperatures. So this is our result. This is the result of the studies. This was done over about 2 or 3 month period with consultation with various parties to try and make sure that everything we put in the software was as close to a normal active chill beam fan coil unit system that would be put in. We haven't done anything special. We haven't used ground source or anything like that to get the energy down. We tried to simulate something that's typical for the UK at this moment in time. So what next? So one of the biggest usage of energy on this graph is your bottom section there, which is your air handling unit fans. If we can actually attack that and actually save some energy there, we can make a significant impact. That's because the air handling unit fans are using about 30-35% of the energy of the total. One of the things you could consider using is demand control ventilation. So you would then add to your controls, you would put indoor air quality sensor in there, maybe CO2 monitoring in there. And then you could vary the amount of primary air ventilation there that comes into space. With an active chill beam, if you put your ventilation rate in at 100%, that's what drives the active chill beam, it's going to give you your design duty. If you turn an active chill beam down to about 75% air volume, you're going to get in the region of 75% out of it. If you turn the active chill beam ventilation rate down to 50%, you will get if the active chill beam can run at that pressure, you're getting a region of 50% of the cooling out of it. The 50% is a very, very approximate. One thing with an active chill beam you can't do is really turn the ventilation rate down anymore, simply because the active chill beams not just responsible for your cooling, it's also responsible for your air distribution. So you don't want it to dump. You need to keep some air pattern from the discharge grill. So you wouldn't want to turn it down to 25% or zero, but you can actually get it down to about 50%, which is going to give you some saving in your air handling unit if you can do that. With a fan coil unit, it's slightly different. Of course, if you've got 100% ventilation rate, the system will deliver 100% your cooling capacity. But when you turn down the active, when you turn down the primary air on the fan coil unit, you don't affect the cooling to space quite so much, because the fan coil unit can go on full recirc and still move the same amount of air around the space and actually deliver the majority of your cooling. Even if you turn the ventilation rate down to 50%, your fan coil unit system can still deliver 90% of the cooling that you may want in that space. In fact, you can actually turn the ventilation off on a fan coil unit, and that fan coil unit can still deliver in the region of 94% of your cooling. I'll just explain that a little bit further, because that might seem a little bit confusing. With a fan coil unit, your design condition is to have your supply air temperature at 16 degrees C. Your return air from the space is at 24 degrees C. So what the fan coil unit sees, the coil in the fan coil unit sees, is actually, under your design condition, around about 22 degrees C. So we run at 100% air volume, supply temperature is going to be 16 degrees C into the space, so that's your design condition, and that's going to deliver 100% of your design cooling. If we looked at 50% ventilation rate, if you use that control philosophy, and that's something that you could consider, at 50% ventilation rate, your temperature going onto the fan coil unit coil is actually elevated slightly. It's actually gone up to 23 degrees C. That means the coil will be a little bit more efficient, might even deliver, it will deliver a little bit more cooling. But if we maintain 100% air volume, your supplier temperature has now gone up slightly to 16.2, but you're still delivering 90% of your design cooling, or potentially can deliver that, even with even burning 50% ventilation rate. You turn the ventilation off, go through that exercise again, we've now got non-coil temperature, going in the fan coil at 24, that allows the coil to operate a little bit more efficiently. Supplier temperature is 16.5 degrees C. This is what we looked at from the coil selection program. So that system still has the potential of delivering 94% of your cooling without the ventilation running. Typically, for an active chilled beam system, your primary air system, your ventilation system, will deliver about 25% of the cooling to the space, and the active chilled beam the rest. So we go back, you can now hopefully understand what I mean by the fan coil unit has a little bit more flexibility when you want to use demand control ventilation. And if we had applied that to the results, and we haven't done a proper simulation, because within the simulation software they got, the occupancy schedule leaves a lot to be desired, so actually to run it wouldn't really be a valid result. But if you applied using demand control ventilation to both those systems, you can dramatically reduce the amount of energy those systems are using. Possibly reduce the fan coil unit system by a little bit more, because you can turn the ventilation rate down that little bit more, because it doesn't affect the overall cooling quite so much. Well, that was really the presentation itself that I've got to deliver today. I do have some references. UK Federation of Environmental Trade Association, specifically the HVAC group, the fan coil unit group, which I'm a member of, and also the National Calculation Methodology NCM Modelling Guide, which was used to do the model and to come up with the results that I've talked to you about today. Thank you. Now, I would love to receive some questions, if you wouldn't mind. And if you do have a question, please walk up to the microphone that's in the centre aisle there. So can I have the first question? Thank you very much.
Good morning. Very nice presentation. Keith Cockrum, Loring Engineers out of Princeton, New Jersey. Do you have any cost information, first cost information, comparing the two systems? And then the other would be maintenance of the fan coil unit versus the chilled beams.
I've stuck purely to the energy side of it for this presentation. Obviously, that's something you could talk about separately, and it'd probably be a longer presentation than what this is. Yes, they do vary slightly. What I would say is that if you're looking at them on a like-for-like basis using 14-17 water for both those systems, with a fan coil unit, you do have a filter in it, but that filter's only there because we have a wet coil. So you could maybe take the filter off the fan coil unit because you're running a dry coil. It's easier to service an act of chill beam because they're exposed into the room, whereas with bank holidays, you typically have to go above the ceiling. But in terms of taking it any further than that, that's, I think, for another day. Thank you. Thank you. Yes.
Hi, Mick.
Hello there.
I'm Carlos, Lisboa. I would like to ask two questions. First, mm-hmm. I think the parasitic load for controls, I was surprised with the value. It was extremely high, in my mm-hmm. opinion. I would ask if you have what supports this very high value.
Okay.
It's a very big, it's a huge energy consumption for parasitic. I believe this is energy spent in actuators and controls, and
yes.
That's it?
Yes. Okay. And we applied a load to each zone for a controller in a region of 10 watts, which in the UK is probably typical for a zone controller. We also applied a little more load during occupancy because you've got valves actuating. So so during non-occupied times, it was a little bit lower than occupied times. I was quite surprised by when I saw that result. The only thing I can actually gain from that is because the controls are on 24 hours a day, but the fans themselves are only on 12 hours a day and not at the weekend. That's why there is that difference there. If it was a 24-hour operation, the result would
but
quite look the same.
This was not based on measurements on actual buildings, no?
No, this is all done within software.
Yes,
unfortunately, I would love there to be a proper analysis done,
okay.
Two buildings exactly the same, and actually run them. But we had to fall back onto this software.
The second issue was the ventilation airflow
mm-hmm.
was calculated based on which standard, 62.1 or European standard 15251?
We'd obviously, based in the UK, we would use the UK standard, and in the UK we use 12 litres per second per person, which is a very high ventilation rate.
Yeah,
it's probably twice as high as what you really need, but we have a British Council officer's guidelines ask for that as a recommendation, and 99% of buildings go in with that sort of ventilation rate.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Larry Spielvogel, an engineer from Philadelphia. In the U.S. in recent years, we have done benchmarking on several billion square feet of office buildings, and the only conclusion you can come to is that they use energy.
Yes.
And the type of system has almost no bearing on how much energy they use. It's more a function of the operator and the building and the local practice, and so the issue is, what good are all these studies if it doesn't make any difference on the result?
I totally agree. One of the biggest problems in any building, it's the same probably anywhere in the world, is about the control and how it's used. That's where it all falls over. We put a lot of effort into upfront designing the control system to work as energy efficiency as possible. Within the first 6 months, the facilities management people have gone in, put everything on manual because the CEO's come in at 12 o'clock at night, never switches it back, and the building's operating 24/7 with nobody in. Yes, controls and how it's used is very, very important. Yes, sir.
Bill O'Donnell, Quantum Group Engineering. Question is, did you do an ADPI calculation on your buildings, too, to see what kind of occupant satisfaction as far as air distribution?
Again, I will come back. Yeah, we focused on the energy. In terms of the ADPI, the fan cooling unit, we would be connected to a good air distribution system. The chill beams would be selected to give you comfort conditioning, but we didn't take it that far. I think the software is capable of doing that, but we focused purely on energy for this.
Now, did you also do chilled water reset, or was that just a constant chilled water temperature you were running?
Constant at 14 degrees C. 14 degrees C to the terminal unit, 6 degrees C to the air handling coil to give you some dehumidification.
And did you use any kind of perimeter system on that too or not?
No, all the heating and cooling was from the active chill beam or the fan cool unit.
Thank you.
Thank you. Yes,
Ken Loudermilk from Titus. Just one comment. I'd like your take on it. The section that you did on the demand control ventilation,
yes,
was very interesting, but at the same time, as you back down on the occupancy in a space and the ventilation requirements, you also back down on the sensible and the latent load in the space. So you know, there's probably a little bit of difference, but not quite as much as one might gather, I guess, from the slide. And that was.
I think it's going to really depend on the building, how it's used, whether it runs 24 hours a day, the type of occupancy in there. But the reason we didn't run it within the software is because the occupancy is the same throughout
right. The
whole year. They don't take account of the fact in the summer months.
30%
of people are not there, so it wasn't worth us running that.
Especially your internal zone.
Yes,
they track each other very closely. So I just wanted to make
But one thing I would add to that, and this is purely from my experience in the UK, is most air conditioned systems are over designed, but they never actually get to that 100% cooling mark. But the part load should be looked at more accurately than the full load. The full load is there just in case you ever get that design condition. Majority of the time, it's in a part load scenario, and sometimes that's forgotten. Any more questions? Well, thank you for coming today. Great to see so many people here at 8 o'clock on a Sunday morning. Very, very much unexpected. I hope that has been a presentation that you'll remember. I know it's probably the first one you're going to see over the coming days, and I hope you enjoy your time here. Thank you very much.